This money paid right away by Friday, or the whole economy will fall over. We can't wait. Mm-hmm. It has to be paid now. We need it now. The whole world economy to get that $700 million through. Now, then it didn't go anywhere. It left, but it didn't arrive anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So it didn't bail out the world economy. What it did was vanish. Into whose hands? We don't know. What happened to this thing? I don't know. Did you see the $700 billion? I lost the track of it.
Well, we're talking about the stimulus that Obama and Geithner approved in February? Or
yeah.
What about the initial one?
That's what I'm talking about, the initial one. The Paulson, $700 million,
yeah.
$700 billion.
Yeah.
And I remember, they were all singing, but I remember Mort Zuckerman because he was so, it was on Morning Joe. You ever watch Morning
sure.
Joe? I
was
like,
yeah.
It was on Morning Joe. We must get this passed today. Mm. We don't have until Friday. It's
right.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
The world economy will fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand. They'll never recover from this. This $700 million. Oh, more. We better do this. The whole fucking world economy is going to fall apart.
Yeah.
Shoo, we got into the deadline. The $700 billion was paid. Oh, my God. Now we don't have anything to worry about. Not a fucking cent. Does anyone have any idea what happened? Just fucking vanished.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, of course. Well, this is a horrible economy. The $700 billion is missing. That didn't come in. We better fire half the staff. We don't need you anymore. We can't afford you anymore.
I would love to hear someone who's as well-spoken as you and maybe has the attitude of Yogi Berra, but who understands the complex labyrinthian world of finance. And could just explain it.
I'm going to do. I'm going to say this on Morning Joe. I'm going on the 21st, and obviously I'm going to talk about Tyson. But I am going to say before I get off. By the way, I'm just curious because we're always hearing we got to find this or that. And I just want to say, you know, I know we're not going to answer this question in 30 seconds. But before I get off the air, I just want to throw out something for you guys to think about. Mm. Does anyone know where the $700 billion that was so urgently needed went? Does anyone have an accounting of that? Because we're worried about 3,000, 6,000, 250,000, 3 million. Oh, my God. But the $700 billion vanished. You guys have a political showing. Maybe someday next week you guys can get together and figure out where the $700 billion went. I'm just going to throw that out.
It's coming Monday?
Monday the 21st.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I actually like that, Joe. I'm surprised that you, with your tendency to burn the midnight oil and the wee hours, but you get up early?
I what happens is I fall asleep at 3 and I wake up at 5:45.
Okay.
And I watch it. It's my favorite show.
Yeah.
Because it's the only show, that and Charlie Rose,
right.
But Charlie Rose is one-on-one. It's the only show where you always feel that what you're hearing is what you would be hearing if they weren't on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that every time there's a commercial break, which
right.
is what's true of every other show, then they're actually talking, and then they go back on the air and it changes. This is pure, exactly the tone and language that they would be using in if they were just having breakfast.
What do you detect that Mika's political tendencies are?
100% like her father. She's in awe of her father,
right.
And her father is a Carter
right.
Democratic
mm-hmm.
liberal.
Mm-hmm.
Her father not only was appointed by Carter, that's where his politics are.
Did you see when he kind of gave her, Joe a pretty difficult time?
On Israel, because
yeah.
I would say almost psychotically anti-Israel. He won't, depending on the situation, he won't say what he wants to say, which is, let's wipe Israel off the map.
Mm-hmm.
What he says instead is, we need a two-state solution, but he underneath he just wants it to
Hello.
Go.
Jeffrey.
He actually got into it with Kissinger the other night on Charlie Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
No.
By the way, Kissinger is really showing his age now. I mean, finally.
Slower
yeah,
to
yeah,
phrase. And,
really mm-hmm. slower. In fact, Charlie Rose had to, on several occasions, say, so what you're saying is, and then say it, and
uh-huh.
then Kissinger would say, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
but he just hit. And Brzezinski was killing it. Brzezinski was, you could see it was a, like decades of venom. This is my time to really knock this guy off his fucking pedestal. And he was brutalizing him because he was much quicker, much more aggressive, and disagreeing with him on the, because everything with Brzezinski is the Middle East, the Middle East, the Middle East, and Kissinger kept saying through Charlie Rose, it's global, it's everything is involved, that's one problem, you can't overemphasize that, but nothing is going to get done if that isn't it. That's number one, that has to be taken care of. And I mean, it was like Marciano and Joe Louis in Joe Louis's last fight. It was a, you know.
When was that? What year was it?
51. 51, when he knocked Louis out of the ring. And then cried afterward. He said, what the fuck did you have to knock him out of the ring for? Why? You know, it's like it broke his heart to humiliate and brutal. Well, then why'd you have to do it? Why not just knock him out? Because he really did a lot more than he needed to. It was like Larry Holmes, who kept saying, I didn't want to hurt Ali. Hit him 650 times for the head. I didn't want to hurt him.
I was struck by a Q&A, a portion of a Q&A that was printed online, and the guy mentioned that you had said that you are now working on, which I didn't know anything about, a film called Director.
Yeah, that I've been doing.
Narrative? Or?
That I've been doing for a couple of years. That's the movie I want to direct next.
Okay.
Which is...
Self-portraiture?
Well, it's a director who's in a kind of crisis in his career and in his life. You know, if I say it's like my version of 8.5, I'm asking for trouble because you're not going to get away with comparing yourself to Fellini. But the idea of all that jazz, 8.5, where a director is making a movie that's a version of his notion of how his life has gone as a director. And I have come up with a conceit that I think is really interesting, which is he's making a movie about what is going on in his life at that time and altering it according to what's happening.
Okay.
So he's rewriting as he's behaving.
Well, this sounds like torn from the pages of your ongoing dialogue that you've had with me for the last...
Yes,
you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Doesn't every director have that moment of, all right, now what? And I mean, isn't that a fairly common...
I think, listen, most directors are just looking for a job. I mean, basically, they want to get hired to do another movie. Right. And most directors don't know how to write, so they have to find somebody who will write it for them. You know, it's, I have a script of development. I'm waiting for a script. I'm waiting for a script. It's, you're in a kind of psychic limbo, you know.
That was a nice piece, by the way, that Scott Foundas wrote.
Very.
I read that. That was really nice.
Yeah, extremely good, well written. He's a bright guy.
Now, why did you fly to Henderson, and why did it happen in Henderson?
Because that's where Tyson is. He lives there.
He lives there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Lives
I thought
in
it
Henderson.
Was somewhere in the outlying. I didn't... It,
well, he lives in Henderson, and there's the best hotel in Vegas. Whenever you go to Vegas from now on, stay at the Green Valley Lodge.
Okay.
It is by so far... It's not on the Strip. You're 8 miles away from the Strip. It is by so far the nicest hotel in Vegas that you don't feel you're in Vegas. It's a really nice resort hotel with a great pool. I mean, it's so, and it's not crowded. It's like it's light years nicer than any other place in Vegas.
Are there slots?
Yeah, there's a casino and slots, but it's sort of like this huge cavernous casino, which if you avoid. You can really feel you're just in a resort. It's just that all of a sudden you're in this ugly pit of shit, and then that's that, you know. But the rest of the hotel's really nice.
Well, what's the prospect? Tell me a little bit more about Director. Is this something that you say a couple of years? Does that mean you're able to move on it within?
If I can finish the script in the next couple of months, and get it set up.
Mm-hmm.
At noon.
At noon.
Yes. It's going to be, you know, I'm finished. I'm also doing a script for Ratner and Evans, which I think Ratner directed on John DeLorean.
I read that also, right?
Yeah, which is also a great subject, by the way. You remember the DeLorean trial, right? I'm trying to get the transcript now because I'm going to key off the trial.
I think we spoke about this once. What the thing that struck me as appalling was the way his significant other, his wife at the time, bailed on him.
Yes, that's right. Yes, right, yeah. So what happened...
Just for appearance's sake, whatever they were
yes,
going on.
That's
I'm not
right,
talking about the
right.
relationship.
Yeah, absolutely.
She did it immediately.
But yeah. If I can get it done in May, end of May, beginning of June, and then, you know, the main thing is the actor. Who's going to be the guy?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know yet. Obviously, it's going to be a star. I have an idea of one or two or three. But that's going to be the key. And then it should be pretty easy to go from there. And it's a great role, so I don't think I'll have trouble getting one of the two or three guys, you know. Have you seen Downey lately?
In person or at the...
Person.
The last time I talked to him was at a press thing for Tropic Thunder last, whatever that was, last summer.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen hide nor hair of him since he went off to do Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Which I think, if you go by the descriptions, it's ludicrous that they said he's kind of a mixture of Indiana Jones and... you know, he's physical. He's you know, kickboxing. He's I'm not disputing
right.
that a lot of this was in the Arthur Conan Doyle books. I've never read a single. Have you?
No, I tried once and I found it excruciatingly boring.
Okay.
Did you ever see the 7% Solution?
Yeah, way back in 71. Was that
yeah.
the Billy Wilder version?
Right. No. 7% Solution was
Herbert Ross,
written by Nick Meyer, whom I went to high school with.
Hmm.
What about...
Do you know
The Soloist. Did you see The Soloist?
it's screening on Monday next week, and for whatever reason, the climate has changed with publicity. It used to be they would tell you about everything. Now... They would just as soon, it's okay if you don't see it, as far as they're concerned.
So they must be totally embarrassed.
Well, they sent out the message in bold letters last fall when they bumped it into March. You know, it didn't have to be the greatest film ever, but it was humiliating to remove it.
Right.
And say, we don't feel it's a fall film. It's like saying we don't believe in it.
Right, right. And now they're not screening it with any rigor.
Well, yeah, but that's generally the pattern with everything. You call them and you say, I understand you're screening something. I'd love to see it. And they say, oh, yeah, well, we have a couple of screenings. But they don't go to you and say, we want you to see our film.
Right.
But, you know, it's when they're ambivalent about it, as they are about this.
Ambivalent or negative?
Possibly negative. I haven't seen it yet. But I hear it hasn't tested well. I'm not saying
yeah.
that the film's any not bad or good. I just hear that it didn't meet the... favor of the audiences they were showing it to last fall.
You know what's bizarre? This movie, which I thought I'd be lucky to get by with only 30 or 40% people being negative about it, which is at least the number of negatives anticipatorially,
right.
It's been like 97%. It's been like Shrek. And these guys are screening over and over and over again everywhere because of it. They've added... literally 150, 200 screenings because they keep trying to find an audience that responds differently, and they can't. It's like, let's pick the totally wrong audience for the movie, and they get the same response.
Yeah.
Now let's pick a different totally wrong audience, and it's the same response. And after a while, they just said, fuck it. This is like, wherever we go, it's the same thing. It's really bizarre. I mean, I almost feel it's going to fuck me up for life because it can't happen again. You know, it's like a fluke. You can't make a serious, ambitious movie and normally have less than 25% of the people saying, what the fuck is that supposed to be? You know, so it's so yeah. odd that, particularly with the hostility going in that so many people have. The key thing was Marshall Fine's class, which was a bunch of middle-aged suburbanites in Rye, New York, and you know he doesn't tell them what they're going to see, so they come to the class.
Why
they don't know what movie
them,
they're going to see.
A little...
I think probably for the very reason that happened here, which is that a third of the people would not have come.
Okay.
They actually, I was standing off to the side, and I would hear them say, "Oh, why are we seeing that? Do I have to see that?" Mm. One of them actually tried to leave. He said, "I guarantee you're going to like it. Stay."
Mm-hmm.
Everyone stayed afterward. The Q&A was like 100% positive. But if you had said going in to the people, do you think you're going to like this movie? Now you see what it was? 40% would have said absolutely not.
Precisely the same experience that I had in that class that I was doing at Woodland Hill that you came out to. when I tried to show, but I was about to show When We Were Kings, the brilliant documentary about Zaire. And was that Zaire?
Yeah.
And people openly said, why are we seeing this? I mean, just stop right now.
Right,
I mean,
right. So. That was Leon Gass, who's a friend of mine, who all the way at Taylor Hackford came in there. They didn't get along. Taylor Hackford has got Ali and, got Norman Mailer and George Plimpton to do that extra stuff, kind of framework. But Leon had shot like 30 hours of that when he was in Zaire just shooting. Mm. He had all that footage for 20 years. He had to know what to do with it. It was all that footage. But it worked out really well.
So the Sony people have been very supportive. I can tell. I can just feel that they've got a brilliant site up, and they haven't invested in it. It really looks good. I'm really impressed by the whole.
The Philadelphia publicist, whom I became friendly with, said to me, "Don't repeat this because I know he doesn't want me to say it to you." Mm-hmm. I'm sure the reason being that I would ask for more money if she said, but Tom Bernard said to me, this is our big movie of the year. This is the one movie we really have a big shot with. So, and they did not feel that way when they bought it. This is the result of these screenings, which have shocked them. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I have to say, they're smart and they're good. I mean, I've known these guys 28 years, and I have to say, there is a reason that they are around and everybody else is gone. They're smart, they're thorough, they're careful, and they're good, and they know what they're doing. And you think, you know, normally you just want to get your point across without having these very hypersensitive, insecure distribution people think that you're telling them how to do their job, when in fact they don't know how to do their job. But you have to be really careful how you word it to be polite. And Bernard and Barker then say something which actually embarrasses you because they've already thought about it and dealt with it. There's almost nothing that I've said to. Once in a while they say, "Oh, that's a good idea," but almost always it's, yeah, we actually didn't do that because of this and this and this, but instead we're doing that, you know, or we already did that. And it's been over and over and over again. Plus the fact that for the first time in my life, I have a great poster. I had a good poster with Exposed, everything. I got a great poster, and their trailer is terrific, which they got. I mean, to have a great poster and trailer alone is, for me, you know, how often you go, oh, fuck, this is it? This is what, you know, and they're going much wider than they normally do with the movie, partially because they're going for different kinds of audiences. They're opening, you know, to aim for, opening at the AMC 42nd Street,
right,
which is not a normal Sony Classics theater.
Yeah.
And the Cinema Studio.
It's a pretty coarse crowd there.
Yeah, and the Cinema Studio, and the Union Square 14, and the Magic Johnson. An L.A. similar kind of distribution.
Where is that for Magic Johnson?
124th and 8th Avenue. So the Magic Johnson and the AMC on 42nd are real kind of hardcore Tyson boxing. And then the cinema studio and the Lincoln Plaza and the Lincoln Plaza, which is the art house they use, not the Lincoln Square, which is on 67th, the Lincoln Plaza, which is the one with the escalator going down, and then the Union Square 14, which is kind of upper middle class multiplex.
I love the quote that Tyson gave to Foundus about how he knows many different types of people, and they're all very polite and nice to know. But he was struck by your, I wouldn't call it maybe nerviness is the wrong term, but he was struck by the fact that you asked him and confronted him, obviously not in a confrontational manner, but you talked to him in a much blunter way than he had ever been accustomed to, because he said most people are afraid to be frank with him, because why risk the possibility of enraging him?
Right.
And that he respects you for having been a franker, but a good friend, but also someone much franker than he was used to, but he went for that. That's the key of why the film works.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, first of all, it's embarrassing to be intimidated by somebody. I would not be able to to deal with myself if I were intimidated by somebody. I mean, obviously, if three people come and put a gun to my head, I'm going to say, what do I have to say to get out of this?
But you've never been intimidated by beauty, for instance?
No, not at all. I've not at all. I've been astonished at the good luck to be next to it.
I was on the set of Philip Noyce's film just a few days ago.
Yeah.
It's called Salt, that Angelina Jolie is starring in, Russian the double agent thing. And I was momentarily, not completely, but I was definitely having a problem with being intimidated by the fact that she has the most beautiful white teeth and she's exquisite.
Oh, really? No kidding. You know how to get over that? I would think if you ever do that, always think of something else that will deflect it. For instance, imagine her as her father in drag.
Uh-huh. Or something along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
Or as, but there's a great line, Betsy Blair just died recently, told me about Orson when she was doing a movie with Orson. And
Betsy Blair, who was married to Cary Grant?
Carol Rice.
Oh, those are different Betsy Blairs then.
No, Betsy, Betsy Drake was married
Drake,
to Carol
Rice. Sorry.
Betsy Blair, who was in Marty. Who was married to Carol Rice. Betsy, and who was married to Gene Kelly before that.
Mm-hmm.
Betsy was talking to Carol Rice. I mean, Orson was in dire depression. He'd had a rough time with Rita Hayworth, and he was kind of longing for it at that moment. And I can't remember who it was who said to Orson, here's the way to get over that. And I'm now going to do something quite brutal. I'm going to say something. Mm-hmm. And after 1 minute of listening to me, you will no longer have a thought that is longing for Rita Hayworth. Okay, close your eyes. He closed his eyes. He said, now imagine Rita Hayworth with a horrible intestinal virus, a flu. She's sitting on the toilet because she has the worst case of diarrhea imaginable. Mm-hmm. Her shit is splashing all over the place, and she starts to vomit all over herself. She's pale and sickly with sweat. She reeks from the vomit and the diarrhea. She's gagging on it. Do you have that picture in your mind? And Orson said, yes, you've just described heaven.
So, anyway, going back, before you started the film, what you're telling me is that you never felt this slight urge to be cautious around.
No. If anything, quite the opposite. If I even feel that I'm supposed to feel that way, or that other people would feel that way, mm-hmm. it immediately feels corny to me to be responding the way other people would. So I would almost say that I feel compelled to go in the opposite direction, just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding that I'm not part of the common response.
To what extent is the psychology of trying to assess tough guys? I know you've been with some, you've known some people on the ragged edge of life, gamblers and guys who were a little scary. Is that something about that background apply to your natural way with people? I mean, you've probably met some more dangerous people than I have. I'm going to assume that just from having.
I would think I've probably met more dangerous people than anyone except dangerous people who have spent all their lives around other dangerous people. I enjoy that. I like the I like being around situations and people who are closer to death than normal. Mm-hmm. Because to me, the key thing is to keep reminding yourself that death is right around the corner and to accept it and to embrace it, as opposed to doing what most people do, which is put it off, bury it, not think about it, or just outright deny it. I keep thinking the last couple of days about this pitcher from the California Angels who was killed. You heard about him?
I guess I haven't. I'm sorry.
2 days ago, a rookie pitcher for the Angels, who ironically had just had his first great outing. He pitched six shutout innings against the A's in Anaheim, and 21 years old, a great prospect, the best sort of young pitching prospect in the Angels organization. And he just called the pitching coach after the game and said, I've got it. I'm really there. I've arrived. His confidence was just solid. 2 hours later, he was driving, and a 22-year-old drunk guy named Andrew Gallo, who was driving with a suspended license, who had been arrested for drunk driving before, at 70 miles an hour, ran a red light through an intersection, smashed into them, and he was killed, the pitcher. So I think of something like that as absolutely emblematic. Here is someone who did nothing to bring himself closer to death. He wasn't driving erratically. He wasn't taking a chance. You might say, well, it was still a tiny chance he was going to get killed. He was doing no more than anyone does who's driving at any moment, any day of the week. Mm-hmm. And yet, all of a sudden, dead at 21. To keep reminding oneself of that in one way or another, both by the company one keeps, the way one thinks, what one focuses on. Like, I hear like something like that, and instead of saying, all right, that's sad, I really don't want to hear about that, I don't want to think about that, I want to brood on it, I do want to brood on it and make myself feel again how imminent extinction is. And, you know, when you're around people who are dealing with it on a kind of daily basis, it's one of the reasons boxing's always fascinated me, because you're basically, despite the fact that you say it's a sport, you're out to kill the guy. There is no other sport where the purpose is to destroy the other person physically. You know, you might say football involves something close to it, or...
ice hockey.
Yeah, but that's not the point of the game. And you say, yeah, but my point isn't to kill him. Well, sure, it may not be the conscious point, but if you're saying I'm going to beat his brains in, there's a very good chance that you will. And certainly dozens of fighters have been killed in the ring, as opposed to dozens of baseball players have been killed on a baseball field, or dozens of hockey players. That hardly ever happens. So that sport fascinates me and always has, even before I understood it rationally. Why did it excite me so much when I was 5 and 6 and 7 years old? I'm sure it was going along with my death obsession, which had started as early as that.
It's funny, there was a, I was talking to, again, Pete, the guy you know from who's interviewed you, and he and his wife Madeline were seeing 33 Variations last night.
Yeah.
Jorge Kaufman's piece, which is about Lou Gehrig's disease.
Right.
Confronting them. And he was told by a couple of people that he knows that I think are producers, but, you know, pretty sophisticated people, you're not going to like it. What they meant was you're not going to want to go
right.
and look something.
Right,
that,
right. Right, I, yeah. It's
so that's more typical than not.
Yeah, right, absolutely. You know? I mean, people want to be cheered up. I was always depressed by things that were supposed to cheer me up. Movies with happy endings have always depressed me, because I've always said, you expect me to believe that? What? Now tell me what happened after that.
I'll tell you what's really profoundly depressing for me, and this is recent, but I was trying to watch Singing in the Rain recently.
Yeah.
And they are so in denial of anything
other than that's right.
euphoria.
That yes, I know. It's, that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's like everything is fine. And I knew it fine. No, it isn't. What are you talking about? What idiotic world are you pretending to live in? What do you mean everything is fine? Nothing is fine. It's temporarily fine on the way to not being fine. It's like, it's sort of always like, now what's really going on?
Is there going to be, by the way, a last surge of like a premiere or something before it opens here?
You're supposed to come actually the premiere. Where are you going to be? You're going to be in New York, right?
I'm here for a long
time. Yeah, so because I put you down, it's on It's on the 21st.
Great.
Is it the 20th or the 21st? The 20th.
Okay.
The 20th. The 20th. Yeah. So hold that open. It's going to be down around Union Square, and then there's a club called Strata. Do you know Strata?
Heard it. Heard of it. In fact, actually, the New York Film Critics, I think, had their award thing there.
So. Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
It's a two-story thing. It's nice.
Yeah. So that'll be, yeah.
So you don't have the pallor of someone who's indoors writing all the time. You don't look, I mean, like myself, I tend to be... definitely too much indoors.
Yeah,
you look like you've
well,
got a little...
I'm a hedonist, you know. I mean, I
Well, that tends to connote being indoors, doesn't it? Hedonists don't tend to.
No, to me, part of my pleasure is when I'm in New York, the only place worth going is Central Park. I mean, I'm there half the time.
Okay.
And I've been traveling a lot, you know, because I've been on a Willie Loman sales tour for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's such hotel to hotel to hotel, mm-hmm. I force myself to get out as much as I can, because otherwise it's like a claustrophobic rat hole, you know. When I was staying in Dallas at the W, they got a great pool, so every minute was free, I went up to the roof pool.
That's the second time you've made reference to pools. So you're actually a lap swimmer? You actually do this as part of your regimen of health?
I do. I love to swim. I grew up in the ocean half the year, and I love the ocean, and I love the water, period. And because my knees are so fucked, underwater exercise is much easier for me than over, because I have no cartilage left in either knee.
What from? What happened?
Basketball and tennis over the years. It's just ripped to shreds.
So going upstairs is a problem? Can be?
I am in pain 24 hours a day. I feel as if I have two fucking spikes in my knees. I mean, the MRIs that I have in my knees, every orthopedist has seen them said, you must have a replacement. It's not even important. Arthroscopic. They got to go. But I so dread and despise the idea of surgery that I just figure, what happens if I die? Just before I'm about to die, I'm going to think, what the fuck did I bother with this surgery for? You know?
Is this a replacement of the hinge joints or something?
No,
metal
the whole
that they
knee
want to
gets replaced.
Wow. They including the kneecap, everything?
Everything. The whole knee is replaced. Steve Wynn told me he had double knee replacement. He was skiing 3 months later, and he's fine, and he loves it. And most people who've had it done swear by it. I just don't want to go through all that shit. I mean, you know, the idea of going in the fucking hospital and being under anesthesia and coming out and asking for more drugs because it hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck that shit. Yeah. You know? Death is okay. Surgery is not.
So what do you think is going to happen as far as our economic calamity is concerned? Because you know everybody. I always trust what you say. What, are we going to be in a Japanese-style, decade-long slumber?
We'll scale down. It's what we were saying before. It's a bunch of people who are going to use it as an excuse to continue to live the way they lived, but who are going to make everybody else miserable. And it's like saying, you actually have been functioning pretty well, and there's really no reason for you to. Mm. I mean, you know, why don't we scale you down and put you in a little more misery and distress while we continue to do whatever we've been doing? Because after all, who the fuck are you?
Right.
And I have money and you don't. I don't need you and you need me. Excuse me just one second.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not allowed to talk out of this. Hello.